Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much, much more. This is episode 47.
That's a number.
It is. It's a prime number, isn't it?
I don't know.
It's not. It's divisible by one in itself, and that's it.
I just think it's an ugly number.
I think 47 has a. It's beauty. Is
I think. I think 47 doesn't bathe.
It, as a wise man once said, beauty is in the eye of the beer holder.
That sounds like something Homer said.
I don't actually have any beer. I'm drinking a delicious Coke Zero.
Mm.
Zero calories, same great taste.
I'm drinking a not so delicious. What was it? The Sumatran blend from Starbucks. It's disgusting.
Okay. Well,
it tastes like burnt water.
Okay, so guys, to let you know, drink Coke Zero. Do not drink Starbucks.
I will continue to drink Starbucks.
We went to a coffee, like a donut place this morning, which is really, really good. But their coffee was so hot, no one could drink it until they got home.
That is kind of unreal. I'm pretty sure it can only get to so hot, you know, unless they defy the laws of physics.
It was steam.
It was coffee steam. That's pretty epic.
It was Alan Moore coffee.
A coffee of steam. A
coffee made of steam. Oh, that was good. I like that. I don't think I've ever done it as good as that. I just need to say those four words. That's
yes.
That's all I can say.
Yes. I think you need to also just... you need some beard mites.
Does that help?
It will help. It'll like make you understand his pain. That's why he was so down on George R. R. Martin. He's been there. He's had to start taking care of himself.
Ah.
He's really judgmental about it. That's some fucking nonsense I'm spouting. I'm glad I got all that out of my system.
I don't know what that was.
It was wonderful.
Okay. There's a picture of apparently George R. R. Martin was in an episode of the Beauty and the Beast live action television show.
Oh, wow.
With Linda Hamilton. He was in like the foreground at a bar, like reading one of his books, eating a sandwich.
That sounds like something he would do. Was he just what?
He's not what? Recognizable.
Interesting. So less beard mites.
No, he had the same beard, but it was black and he weighed probably 100 less pounds.
That happens to people.
Yeah. It does happen to people. George R. R. Martin, finish your books. I don't want you to die.
I know.
Or at least finish your books, then die. God.
That's right. Don't enjoy it.
I don't want someone else finishing them. It won't feel real.
It'd be like Dune.
May your knife chip and shatter.
May thy knife chip and shatter.
So, I think it's time for checking in. Eric, make a noise.
Yeah.
There we go. Check.
Just command me to make a noise.
That's what you're here for, noises.
I'm glad.
Checking in is the segment where Eric and I talk about all the nerdy things we've been up to during the week and make suggestions. Or the anti-suggestion. We don't do those as often, but we have made them. Eric, what do you got?
Have you ever heard of Lookout?
I don't think so.
It started, I don't even remember how many years ago it was, that Penny Arcade, they had like three concepts that they came up with. Okay. Their idea was, we're going to do a series of strips based on these three mini ideas.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to expand on them based on what you readers like. One of them was a detective story about an android, which I really enjoyed. I voted for that one. But the one that won was called Lookouts. It was about these, like, Boy Scouts in a fantasy world.
Okay.
And not so long ago, there was a sale on Comixology of the whole trade put out by Cryptozoic.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it sitting around. I just bought them. There was like 7 books. I bought them for $1 each. It was well worth it just to have them in my iPad sitting around for later. I finally got around to reading them, and I'll be damned if they aren't amazing.
Really?
Oh yeah, it's really, really good. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's like the absolute most amazing story that I've ever read, but I'm very, very taken by the artist. His name is Rob Mamertz. I'm not really sure how to say that because it's written in craziness. I don't really know.
Mamertz?
I don't know.
He does have the name Rob, so I can approve.
Yes, it's Rob with 2 B's.
So like Rob Stark?
It is like Rob Stark. He is Rob Stark, the artist. Mm. But he's got like a really fun style and a lot of the same influences, a lot of the same people that I enjoy. The book is gorgeous. I think maybe more for the backgrounds and the environments,
mm-hmm,
than just there are the drawing of the characters, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
But it's glorious, and he's someone that that I need to follow more of. He's amazing and very talented. The other thing that has dropped into my lap is, and this is a really strange thing to check in with, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay.
It's a Facebook group called Christians for Michelle Bachman.
Oh, okay. I didn't know about these life changes you've made, Eric.
Well, it's done very tongue in cheek, very ironically.
Okay.
I don't like necessarily stereotyping anyone's point of view, but it very much is making fun of, how do I say this, conservatives that don't think very much.
They exist.
Yes. I'm sure there are very bright conservatives. I think the people that are huge fans of Michelle Bachman are probably not them.
No, probably not.
It is not a real page, but you can look up Christians for Michelle Bachman, and they're making all kinds of memes and infographics. And would you like me to read you a couple of them?
Sure, go ahead.
Because they're quite hilarious.
That's for everyone at home. That is Eric's thinking noise.
It is. That is my thinking noise. The cover photo I should start off with is it's got giant bullets. Like rifle ammo and a shirtless Jesus.
Ooh, wow.
With like his shirt thrown over his shoulder.
Well, that's how I picture Jesus.
One of their good infographics. Know the facts. Cannabis causes brain shrinkage.
Ooh.
And it shows a brain and it says the brain of a healthy dead person. And then it says the same brain after 6 months of cannabis use. It's just, I mean, you've seen it. It's got sort of an onion sort of satire,
yeah,
to it, but it's also a lot of stupid, very mean-spirited jokes at conservatives. The thing that drew me in is they have a series of stuff that says, this is what atheists believe, and they'll just, or this is what this person believes. The image that drew me in was a big, fluffy cat sitting on a piece of pizza in space, and it said, this is what atheists believe.
Well,
and I was like, this is amazing.
This is the
best. I nearly sent it to you because it really seems right up your alley.
I do worship a giant cat sitting on a piece of pizza in space.
That does sound like something you would worship. Here's another question that's been posed by Christians for Michelle Bachman. If humans evolved from monkeys, why has no one ever been shot by a monkey?
That's good.
It's all pretty delightful.
I may have to invest some time in that.
So I assume you sat around and, you know, picked your nose all weekend.
Not the whole weekend.
Okay.
I felt like actually this weekend has been quite action-packed, and there's still more to come. First thing I want to talk about is Captain America Winter Soldier. Came out this weekend. I saw it Friday night to a sold-out show. It is very, very good. All the hype about it is well deserved. It is a very good movie. I would say it's basically Bourne Identity meets the Marvel Universe. In many ways, it's a spy espionage thriller. A lot of the action scenes are similar to that. Really quick cuts, shaky cam, but not too much, just the right amount. Like a lot of shaky cam can make me not want to watch a movie. But it's just enough of it to, you know, get you in a good... fight choreography is amazing.
Hmm.
It's unbelievable how fast and quick and good the fight scenes are.
Is it actually clear? It's actually clear where you can see what's going on?
Yes, yes. You can... They take out that shaky cam whenever you're actually focusing on two guys. It's fast enough for it to deliver the impact of, like, how mm-hmm. fast these people are moving. But mm-hmm. slow enough so that you can actually understand what's happening.
I think that's really important, and a lot of fight scenes don't take that into consideration.
Yeah, and so good on them. The story's really good. It's kind of a combination of a lot of Ed Brubaker's work on Captain America with Winter Soldier, Bucky coming back, and surprisingly, Secret Warriors, which you haven't read, Eric. Yeah. I have read. We'll read it eventually because you should. It's a lot of Nick Fury and the history of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff like that. And I was not expecting that influence on this movie, but it's there, and it's actually really, really cool.
Well, it seems topical. Maybe we should throw it in the hat for Nerd Boy.
Yeah, and they do, and they name drop Mr. Dr. Stephen Strange at one point.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm definitely dying for a Dr. Strange movie. That would be really weird.
It'll be there. They'll make it.
You know who needs to play Doctor Strange?
Who?
Alec Baldwin. Tell me you wouldn't love it. It would be so right and so wrong.
That'd be like Machete. It'd be like that level of like parody.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Exactly.
Captain America Winter Soldier is really, really good. The guy who plays Winter Soldier, Bucky, is solid. Robert Redford, crazily enough, works really well in a Marvel movie.
Hmm.
Like, in this type of movie. Like, that's, I think, the best thing about the Marvel Universe is these movies is that because of how disparate these influences on the comics are, you can have a spy espionage movie with superheroes in
it.
And it's completely opposite from the first Captain America movie, which is more like almost a war movie, like a rah-rah war movie, basically. Mm-hmm. And this one's like a spy espionage thriller, and I imagine the next one will be completely different, too. Just thematically, everything works in the same way. But it does have that Avengers quippy Joss Whedon kind of feel, where there's humor. Mm-hmm. It's not a grim, serious movie. There's humor in it, too. It's really good.
They try and lighten it up somewhat.
Yeah, and... guy who played the Falcon, he's really good. I wasn't expecting to like him so much. He's really cool. Falcon's great in this. They're all good. It's all good. Go see it.
It's all good.
It's all good. Definitely go see Captain America. It deserves all the attention.
Total buy.
Totes my goats. The other thing I want to check in real quick is Tate's 21st anniversary sale. Tate's is my local comic shop. Spectacular shop at that. They have a giant tent sale on their anniversaries, I guess, and they had some guy, you bring your t-shirt, and they screen print shirts for you. They had four designs you could pick from. They had a giant tent full of comic books. You spend like $30, you can fill up an entire long box. All hardback trades, collections, all that stuff's 50% off, which is what got me. I got four trades of Meta Barons. I got a giant X-Stax omnibus hardcover with that's Peter Milligan and Allred. I've been wanting that for a long time, and half off, I can't pass it up. Got Squadron Supreme, which I don't own. I think a trade of Queen and Country. Probably something else I'm forgetting. But those are, I mean, and I got a Miranda. I got a Miranda action figure, so I can have a Miranda shot whenever I want.
Whenever you want.
Whenever
you
want. But it's, and that they know how to do things. It was a lot of fun. It was really neat. But yeah, that's it. You guys,
sounds good.
I was so shocked
when you told me that you got the Meta Barons too.
Well, I'm a collector, and they're rare. Mm-hmm. And I never said I don't like the Meta Barons. It's like an artifact.
It is. It is.
It's an artifact of comic book history. I need to own it.
It got us in a good conversation with the creators of Remnants.
It did. It's a good thing to talk about. It's certainly iconic.
Yay, verily.
Yay, verily. But that's all I got. If anyone's in South Florida, I can't recommend Tate's enough. It's such a great shop. With that, I think we're sufficiently checked in.
That is sufficient.
And now it's time for the floppiest part of the week, and it is time for... Say it with me, Eric. Weekly floppies.
I didn't say it.
You didn't say it. What? I was waiting for you to say what, and you didn't say what.
What? What?
I hate you.
Good.
Weekly Floppies is a part of the show where we review the week's books and tell you to buy or do not buy them. And I would say you should take our advice. So this week in Floppies, we are starting off with Pretty Deadly number 5. This one has been a long time coming. It's the last issue of this arc. No, I don't want to update right now. I got to read comic books. It's written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, art and cover by Emma Rios, colors by Jordi Belair, letters by Clayton Cowles. This is seeing a lot of stuff happen. Like, everything kind of come together in this massive explosion of craziness.
Yeah, I think it was, I honestly think too much happened in this book.
Yeah, I think I had to reread it a couple times to get a hold of the stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how it felt to me? Is it felt a lot like this is a story that they wanted to go on for years and years, mm-hmm. and they sort of had to push it together and make it wrap up in a very, very short amount of time. Like it feels like they almost wanted this to have a very manga style arc, which those kind of stories will go on for years and years. And I think the fact that it basically ends in 5 issues, things feel a little easy to me. Things just sort of end.
There's going to be more. There's going to be another volume.
Yeah, I know. It feels like they're wrapping it up to do other things.
Yeah.
But it really feels like this wasn't given the attention that they wanted to. Like, there was some editorial decisions that they had sort of forced them to condense things.
I'm not sure. There was a very long gap between 4 and number 5. So I cannot speak for any of that stuff behind the scenes.
I mean, I obviously don't know. I'm just saying how it feels to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know any more than you do.
Yes.
There's a lot of stuff happening. I think it gets better when they just get to like the last half.
Mm-hmm.
It's more smooth just because it's simpler. There's like 3 guys and they're trying to survive. 3-4 characters, and that's the story. The art is as gorgeous as it has been.
Yeah, Emma brings the fucking heat.
This is it's really, really good. There's so much all those butterflies and the feathers and all there's so much movement.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout this entire issue. And some of the pages are just so much stuff crammed in. They're exploring some of this mythology even more. And
it still feels a little shortchanged to me. Like, based on where it started, and it just feels so big and grand.
Yeah.
And it really just feels to me like
they're rushing through it. Yeah, I think they could have gotten a couple more issues out of all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this kind of story would warrant at least 2 trades worth, and I think it would have been a better story. They should just dwell on the moment a little bit more. I think they probably, like I said, I think they wanted to drag it out manga style based on the manga influence that I feel in here. But, you know, it is what it is. I don't know that an audience that they're looking at here would really go for it.
No, they do say Ginny's going to return in volume 2. I don't know how much of all these other characters are going to return.
Yeah.
That's a question.
It sort of feels like, I mean, what's your thoughts on that? Do you think it's going to be a more of a Western style title that's going to be based more around Jenny?
I have a feeling, I mean, they do kind of shut the door on a few of these characters,
mm-hmm.
but some of them are obviously going to be still around. I think this ensemble is going to probably continue to develop and evolve.
Yeah.
And you'll probably, drop some, gain some as the series. I think it's going to, I can't imagine it will lose a lot of, and sure, still have these Western / Eastern, you know, this weird mix of stuff. I think it's going to probably stay somewhat in that wheelhouse. I can't imagine it just going straight Western. I imagine it'll stay, because I love it. I love this kind of universe they're building. And the feeling of it, I think it's hard to nail down, but kind of the idea of this magical Western.
Mm-hmm. I think that,
dark Western fantasy.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. And I think that, I just hope they continue to do things right, because this and a couple of the last issues just don't, they haven't rung quite true to me. But I'm still, they have all the talent in the world. It doesn't feel to me that they would rush through it quite so much if it wasn't like an editorial decision, like someone, what was this? Is this Image? Who's doing this?
This is Image, yeah.
Yeah. Probably not quite so much creative control, but they probably, I don't know. They probably got some feedback. They're probably trying to push it towards some other sort of story narrative and not dwell in this arc for too long. I'm not really sure.
I don't either. Regardless of all our criticisms, I'm still a solid buy on this in this series as an entirety. The art alone could sell it.
No, the art alone does sell it. It's delightful.
It's really beautiful, and I really enjoy this kind of Western, this dark Western fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever way we describe it, it's really interesting, and I hope it continues to evolve. Bye.
Yeah, I'm a little reluctant on being a buy, but this is the darling book. I am critical of it, but that doesn't mean you should probably pick up the trade when this comes out.
Yeah, all Image
that's,
trades.
That's where
are,
you should go.
Image trades are always $10. The first one's always $10.
Go
so
for it.
$10 for this, for five issues of this. Definitely worth your purchase and to check it out.
Yeah. If anything, just to introduce you to Emma Rios.
Exactly. Next up, we're moving to Marvel. And Marvel's latest epic begins here.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
In Inhuman number one, written by Charles Soule, one of his seven ongoing comic books he writes. Art by Joe Madera. I can't say his name correctly.
Joe Madera.
Madera? Okay.
I think you said it. That's what everyone I know is always saying. You just say Joe Mad.
Joe
that's
Mad.
Perfectly acceptable.
And colors by Marte Gracia. Letters by Clayton Cowles. This book has a storied history already. The first issue just came out. Matt Fraction was on it to write this series for a long time. And about, I don't know, 4 months ago, they pulled him off. Because they weren't on the same page after like 6 months of back and forth between Marvel and Fraction, and I from what Max how Fraction had described this book, how he was going to write it, it sounded very kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like any kind of mainstream Marvel comic that is their latest epic, as they describe it themselves, that has meta barons in it. I don't. Mm-hmm. That'd be very. I hard sell for one of the big two. Both parties understood that they didn't want what the other one was doing, so they switched over to Charles Soule. He's writing it. What do you think about this, sir? Do you like it?
Not terribly. I mean, it doesn't, like, horribly offend me. I can't tell if the writing just doesn't sort of work for me, if I don't like where the story's going, if Joe Madera's artwork is kind of coloring the way that I feel about it.
Yeah.
And I don't, I have come around on Joe Madera. I used to really dislike him. I think he has really developed his talent. but it seems like every dude he draws looks like Akuma from Street Fighter.
I was about to say that.
Yeah, totally. Like, this guy is friggin', he's Akuma.
I know. I'm like, it's the same guy.
It's exactly. I mean, and then this other dude becomes an Inhuman, and he's Evil Ryu for no good reason.
Dante. Come on, Eric. His name is Dante, and he controls fire.
Well, there we go. That's so clever.
Get it?
When did Black Bolt die? This was in some backstory between the last part of this.
When he exploded Adelon, they never found him.
Ah, so everyone thinks he's dead?
Everyone thinks he's dead.
I was thinking that there was something between, like, that, like, between Infinity and this.
Well, there's Inhumanity.
We haven't read.
There's Inhumanity, and they've explored it a little bit, trying to find it. They never found him, and he's gone into hiding because he wants to be...
Yes.
He's like, machinations he's trying to control and stuff. But so they never found his body, and no one knows if he's alive. Everyone thinks he's dead, yes.
Okay, well, I was unclear on that point. I figured that would come up in the conversation. This is, I mean, if you like Joe Madureira, this is good Joe Madureira artwork. I don't understand why he doesn't just, like, work exclusively for Udon or something. Because it's clear that's what the man needs to do.
I don't know. The story is very simple. I don't care for it. No, the Terrigen Mists are going around the Earth now. I mean, they've been doing it in the Inhumanity books anyway. I mean, Miss Marvel, that's what she... she's an Inhuman, basically. I mean, she gets hit by the mist and transforms. Mm-hmm. And this is... We're seeing, basically, the main character is also Inhuman, but he gets kidnapped by the guy from Street Fighter. And...
Yeah.
And he's trying to kill all these guys and take back the Inhuman kind of... take back the control of the Inhumans, I guess. He doesn't like where Black Bolt and Medusa and all them, the royalty has gone. And that's kind of the clash between these worlds, I guess, is the story.
I guess so.
I'm...
One of them is a psychopath and the other one is killing people.
Yeah,
Do you like how I snuck that in on you?
Yes. I like this book, I guess, enough.
I'm not really wild about it.
I don't like how he looks. I don't like that he looks like Street Fighter guy.
He's, like, not even subtle.
No, it looks exactly like him.
Yeah.
And I like the art well enough, aside from that dude. It's just kind of generic-ish. I think that's my main complaint. It's executed perfectly fine. I mean, it's competent execution, but I like the Inhumans a lot, which softens it for me.
Yes.
I'm a soft buy.
I'm kind of a squishy do not buy. I could call it competent too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I particularly think that the colors, and the photoshopping is done really, really well, and it's enhancing Joe Madureira's work really, really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very nice looking and cinematic book, but
yeah,
it's a popcorn comic. It is not a thinking man's comic.
No,
I guess that's really what Joe Madureira's fan base is it's people that aren't going to think deeply, and they're just going to be like, oh man, this guy looks like a Kuma. He's blowing dudes up. Yeah. I mean, it's fine. I don't hate it. I don't want to commit suicide when I read it, but at the same time, I'm not going to recommend it to anyone unless you're a huge Joe Madureira fan. So I'm a do not buy.
So, split decision on that one, peeps.
The splittest of decisions.
Yep. Next one up is Moon Knight number 2, written by Warren Ellis, art by Declan Shalvey, colors again by Jordi Belair, letters by Chris Eliopoulos. This is exploring another aspect of Moon Knight, I guess. This is more the superhero-y Moon Knight, not the detective Moon Knight. But it's told in a very interesting way.
Yeah.
I really like how Warren Ellis had tweeted about the first 8 pages how he made both Jordy Belair and Declan Shelby hate him for making them do it this way. But I think it's really interesting how the first 8 pages develop. Still, even in this, we see Moon Knight in a superhero-y, his Batman-y costume, mm-hmm. I guess.
It's a little bit on the Batman-y side.
Because, I mean, that was the analog a lot of the time, that it was Batman but crazy. But the fact that he's white and his cape is this giant white thing flowing mm-hmm. through the darkness and stuff, it's really, really striking. A really gorgeous. He's not dressed in all white, but still those portions of his costume, the way that the cape can overtake parts of the page.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing from the art that I really take away.
Yeah, his cape is sort of falling into the gutter.
Yeah, exactly.
It's stylish and it's clever. There's a lot of interesting design in this book. I really enjoy what you're talking about, that whole beginning part.
Yeah.
And it is very clever. Ellis is doing, the kind of thing that Alan Moore would always set out to do. Like, what can a comic do that no other medium can?
Right.
And he's thinking of each of these pages as, the whole page tells a story and not each panel.
Right.
And it's interesting. The sort of device that he's invented to show all these people getting assassinated.
Yes.
At the same time, it eats up almost all the book. So by the time you get to the end of this book, you're like, why is this over now? It feels like it just started.
Yeah.
Did you get that feeling as well?
The first issue, this is self-contained story. There's it seemingly is not going to go anywhere. There's only one character of any substance that's left at the end of this, aside from Moon Knight, and maybe we'll see him again. I have my doubts.
You know what it makes me think of, and this is a real duh moment.
Mm-hmm.
Planetary.
Well, yeah. And there's
also by Warren Ellis, for those that don't know.
Yeah, and one issue stories that are
mm-hmm.
and maybe
little vignettes. Yeah. I would almost call it exactly the way many of the early Planetary were, and then it started to take an overall shape, and maybe that's what he's planning.
If this turns out even half as good as Planetary, I'd be delighted.
Planetary's pretty damned good.
Yeah, and this is, there's no mention of Mark Spector, like the guy behind the mask. There's mm-hmm. no mention of his other, the Sherlock Holmes-esque mm-hmm. guy we saw in the first issue. It's just completely separate from it. And I have a feeling that each of these issues is going to be a different aspect.
Mm-hmm.
This is that we've done 2 aspects so far, and then the third and fourth issue will be, and then maybe the fifth issue will come back and we'll get a greater overarching. But it's not holding your hand. It's not saying
no. It's not. It is absolutely not. That's a good way to put it. It's expecting you to bring a lot to the table, I think.
Yes, and.
Can we drill down on this for just a second?
Sure.
What do you mean by aspect? Is this like
a personality? Like mm-hmm. Calling it a personality is because mm-hmm. in the first issue they kind of established that this isn't a psychosis. This is a deity has taken over your brain.
Yes.
And your brain, that is how your brain has chosen to perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you have multiple personality disorder, dissociative identity disorder, whatever they want to call it, is that you have all these multiple personalities and they're trading, back and forth. When that's not true. It's different aspects of this deity.
Mm-hmm.
It's different parts. So
I was going to say it when you say aspect, it makes me think of Morpheus in the Sandman.
Exactly.
And how he appears different to different people that perceive him.
Yes.
And is conceptually that supposed to be what's going on with Moon Knight because he's possessed by this deity?
Yeah, the deity. Well, I think the deity uses him in any way. The deity would, he goes for that guy who is killing people in the night and taking their organs in the first issue. He chooses the detective.
Mm-hmm.
That, and then in this case, there's a sniper taking people out. He chooses this superhero version-ish, the Batman version.
Mm-hmm.
and, you know, depending what he wants to use, I'm sure they'll explore it more thoroughly. That's all, what I'm bringing to it, is that this deity, the Khonshu, is like pulling whatever, you know, in some cases he needs a hammer, in some cases he needs a wrench, some cases he needs a screwdriver. You know, he brings the tool to the table that he needs on that particular occasion. That is what I'm bringing out of it. That may not be true because, I mean, we've only seen two issues, but that's what I'm thinking. You know, whatever case it is, that's the one he uses.
It is important for gods to hammer and screw people.
It's a long history of gods doing that.
I think so. And that's why I subscribe to Christians for Michelle Bachman.
Precisely. I mean, it does make those first eight pages do make this comic seem to go really fast.
It really eats up a lot of space.
But I still love it. So
on review, I enjoy it a lot more because I see the conceptual brilliance of it. The first read through, I didn't care for it quite so much because it felt so brief. But it is a technically excellent comic book.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of it as like those, like maybe Brothers, mm-hmm. or those games that you can beat in 4 hours that cost $15.
Yes.
You're like, I can get a longer game, but the quality is
high. Also the originality, the quirkiness of the ideas, the experimentation. And even in a first read through, when I was like, I don't know that I'm crazy about this. You know, I wish there was a little bit more meat to it. I still felt really admirable about, like, wow, he's really done some exciting things here. I don't know. It made me happy that he's being so experimental, that he's doing the things to push the medium forward.
Right. And this is something I can get behind. This is quickly moving into one of my favorite books in Marvel. I am a definite buy. I will be buying this.
Yeah.
We may not be reviewing every issue on here, but I will be purchasing this book every week it comes out.
It's an exciting book. I can get behind it as well.
So that's
for sure.
Moon Knight number 2, double buy.
Absolutely.
Double buy. We're going to go over DC and Detective Comics number 30. Taken over by the team that did The Flash. And
that explains a bit here.
Does
yeah.
it? I think so. Let me get to that. Storytellers Francis Manapul and Brian Buccioletto. Letters by Jerry K. Fletcher. Icarus, Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed this a lot. I was not expecting to like it. I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Eric? Do you like it?
Yeah, I did. I did enjoy it. I was going to say something that applies more to our next DC book.
Mm-hmm.
This one was just solid good. Batman is Batman.
Exactly.
It rings true. The characters are treated correctly. Batman doesn't look like a 19-year-old.
No, he doesn't. He looks kind of grisly.
Mm-hmm.
Which
this is a classic, true to the characters Batman story. The surrounding cast is very interesting. The sort of set pieces and environments mm-hmm. are very interesting. It's nothing. It's starting to feel like DC is kind of starting to get it, or we're finding the good books now, and we just had a nice long shit streak of finding terrible books.
Yeah, this is really interesting. It has a nice hook on the last page.
Mm-hmm.
The art is very moody. It feels like Batman. It's like you know, dark and
it still manages to be very colorful despite the heavy shadows, which is a very good thing because a lot of it speaks volumes of the colorist, because a lot of artists they tend to make things very gross and brown and gray when they're trying to make things dark, and this is it's nice rich colors. They're not really garish and obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it's very colorful. So I think they've made a lot of really good design decisions
With the color. Francis Manapul, he did pencils, colors, and inks, from what I can tell. There's no other artists listed. No artists credited, so he did everything.
Well, he is the bomb diggity, because that is impressive.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of these Batman stories you've been reading don't feel like my Batman, like the Batman I know. This feels like a Batman story. You got Bruce Wayne. Even when he's in his suit, he doesn't look like Eric said. He doesn't look like he's 19 years old.
He doesn't look like child Bruce Wayne. He looks baby Bruce.
He looks like a man.
Yes.
Not a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And
he looks like Playboy billionaire.
Yeah, and you got a lot of interesting new side characters are in there.
Yeah.
They're
incidental characters, you could call them.
That are interesting. You see him actually mourning Damian a little.
Like, yeah.
It
actually didn't feel like bullshit, did it?
No. Because it's not trite.
Yeah.
It felt authentic. And, like I said, a nice hook on the last page. This will be the Batman book I'm reading.
I think that we need to follow up on it. It's, it feels good in the ways that almost everything else we've read just does not.
Right.
I'm excited for a Batman book.
Exactly. Detective Comics number 3, that is a double buy. Go buy it. Good Batman. I like Batman.
Batman it up. It's got LaRue in it.
Lastly, and probably leastly, at least from my experience, is Aquaman and the Others.
I didn't hate this quite so much as you might think here. You didn't care for it?
Yeah. Written by Dan Jurgens, pencils by Lan Medina. Ink is Alan Martinez, Rob Lay on letters, Matt Mila or Mia on colors. It just felt kind of meh to me.
Do you know what it reminds me of exactly? What's that book with the original Human Torch?
Invaders.
And it feels a lot like that book.
Yeah.
It feels like it's talking directly to that audience. Everything is very, very diehard brain, and when I say comic booky, I guess that's a very squishy thing to say, but just like dumb action sequences and like someone, like the people narrating what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know what that is or who that audience is.
What's that?
It's the alarm. Younger.
We're under attack.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's. I'm not going to say insulting the reader's intelligence, but it's clearly talking to a very specific audience of comic book readers. All the poses feel very comic booky to me.
Yeah, they're trying to more epic, kind of like, whoa!
Yeah, like, it's like, how many times have you seen, I don't even know what this girl Tarzan character's name is, but it's this scene where she's doing this like lunge away from the camera.
Yes.
How many times have you seen that in a comic book? I mean, I don't know if you've really seen it to where like her butt flap is blowing up in the breeze there.
Yes.
Seems like a really bad decision for someone to wear something like that, unless they're just trying to show off their junk. But like this Aquaman pose, it's I'm not going to say it's hackneyed, but they're speaking directly to people that want this the same thing they've seen over and over again.
Yeah.
In terms of
my main problem with this, I mean, the art is superhero-y.
It is. It's good though.
Yeah, it's not
enjoy
bad.
It.
It's my main problem is the plot, and I mean, it is a clear MacGuffin here. Mm-hmm. Look, we need to collect these artifacts and do that. I mean, it's just like,
yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that kind of story.
No, I don't mind a MacGuffin type.
Yeah,
clear. But this is very overt and like,
yeah.
Well,
it's not made for people that want nuance in their comic book. Clearly,
because there is none.
There's none. Do you know one thing that I was going to compare this to Flash? earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sort of feels like, it feels like a story happening with a DC superhero artificially inserted into it. Flash felt like it was a story of, you know, murder and serial killers and supernatural stuff, and Flash is bolted onto it.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like a story about this team of people with Aquaman weirdly inserted into it. Do you feel that too?
Well, I think there's a lot of stuff in here that we aren't privy, just because we haven't read the backstory on this.
And that's all fine, but it still feels kind of weird.
Yeah, we
to
don't
me
have.
That way.
There's is. I think they just try and do too much in this first issue, mm-hmm. where they're like they're bringing back, you know, four characters that most people know nothing about. I clearly don't know anything about any of these four characters, and tying them to Aquaman. I'm assuming that Aquaman has history
with
these people.
I was going to say, you think there's history.
Yeah,
here.
So I assume that in Geoff Johns' run with Aquaman, he tied these characters together, and now they're going, oh, let's write a team book with these guys.
My whole feeling is it doesn't feel terribly natural. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
Well, they're trying to bring back, they're trying to create action scenes with all these characters, mm-hmm. and then bring them all together and give mm-hmm. them a reason for be together in one issue.
It's incredibly ambitious. I don't think they do an absolutely terrible job with it.
No,
it's a little dumb.
Yeah, I can't get behind it. I'm a do not buy on this.
I'm actually fairly indifferent to where I don't necessarily hate it, but I don't think I've said one word of praise for it. So I don't necessarily think I will recommend it to anyone. I'm not sure how to describe the comic book fan that would like this book, but it's people who like they're not looking for the thinking man's comic book. They're looking for classic comic book poses and classic comic book storylines, and I don't even know what.
Yeah, I don't either.
I would not particularly recommend it, but it doesn't mean that it's terrible. Yeah, I would not recommend it really to anyone that I know.
Yeah, that's a double do not buy Aquaman and the others, number one. Before we leave the segment, I would like to mention that I read a few other books. Black Widow number 5 came out this week.
You read comic books?
I do.
What?
It's crazy. Black Widow number 5, excellent. It's really good. It's as good as any of the other issues. If you've been picking up Black Widow, continue. It's great. Magneto number 2, I like it. I like this issue more than the first one.
That's saying a lot.
It's developing. It's going somewhere. You get a clear direction.
Is there Dylan face in it?
No, no Dylan face.
That's probably good.
Yeah. And finally, Starlight number 2 came out. That's the Mark Millerverse book with the aging Flash Gordon-esque guy.
I might have to pick up all of these.
Yeah, it's good. It's a little bit more, more carefree, a little bit more mm-hmm. humor in this one. It's,
interesting.
It's not as grim.
Less people dying of cancer.
Less people dying of cancer.
That always buoys my.
I think
my sense of happiness.
Well,
there.
From what I can tell, I think it's introducing basically the guy's sidekick in his space adventures.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it could be. It's an interesting pair they'll make. We'll see how it goes. And a couple trades being released. Only a couple of them I think were worth mentioning. Buzzkill, which both of us really enjoyed.
Yeah.
On a kind of a comic book that came out of the blue. Trade came out this week. Go pick it up, support that, and a re-release of Red Sun.
That's big news.
Yeah, probably one of the reprint of probably one of the most famous Elseworlds story there is.
Was talking to our mutual friend, Mr. Yusuf Danik,
mm-hmm.
alias Yusuf Hummus Islam. I am so glad he didn't get angry when I called him that the first time, because that's a terrible thing to say.
I think he didn't get angry.
And I'm a terrible person.
He didn't get angry because it's you. I think if some random person off the street.
I know. I think he could be. But we were talking about, as you might imagine, Superman and Neil Gaiman. because he just had to talk about how he hated all those things. and he reaffirmed that he liked All-Star.
Mm-hmm.
And someone told him he should read Red Sun, which is amazing.
He should read Red Sun.
And we were talking about the comparison between Superman and Mickey Mouse. And then someone said they need to make Red Sun Mickey Mouse.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That's good.
Yeah.
I can
Red Sun Mickey Mouse.
That's good.
And of course, people were, you know, they were whipping out their... I can't even remember. We have to protect the proletariat. You know that they have their communist, their communist Mickey Mouse voice.
Communicky.
Communicky.
Right.
Yep.
Yep. So that's it for weekly floppies. Next up is Nerd Boy Book Club. Get your glasses on. You're reading focals.
Get them.
Eric's
get
got
some.
Eric's got his on, right?
I do not. You can't see him. Oh. You can see. I have a camera now. You can see me.
Oh yeah, you. Ooh.
No one can on the podcast.
I can see him. He's not wearing glasses though, people.
I'm not.
He's looking pretty handsome though.
I what can I say? I can't help it.
We are handsome boys.
I'm a beautiful man.
Yep. This is a segment where we announce beforehand, probably the previous week usually, what we're going to read. You guys can read along with us. Give us questions, stuff to discuss. Basically, like it functions like a book club, if you've ever heard about those things.
Hence the clever name.
Hence the name.
I just got it.
Yeah, crazy. This week we're doing a duo of books, Smile and Drama by Raina Telgemeier, and that is how you say it.
That's how it looks.
That's how she actually has a recording of herself pronouncing it.
It doesn't look that difficult to pronounce to me.
I'm sure she gets all kinds of crazy.
I think Rob Mamertz is a little more difficult.
He should release a clip of him pronouncing his name.
He should, and then he should get Alec Baldwin to pronounce it with his smoky voice.
What is it, you and Alec Baldwin? Been watching too much of The Shadow.
Well, he's in the room with me.
Oh, is
making
he?
Making me say his name over and over.
Well, I don't see him in your little webcam.
He's giving me a back massage.
I don't see it.
He shrunk down to the size of the atom.
He has that power too?
He's got little footprints on my brain.
Oh my God, watch out. No one ever looks at the brain.
No one ever looks for those little footy prints.
No one, the footprints on the brain. That's the thing. One thing no one ever checks. Batman doesn't even check that.
Nope, Batman's a dumb.
No, he's an idiot.
This conversation just got a little stupid up in
yes,
here.
Yes, it did. But I've been, you know, you're a lot online in the comics community a lot, and you read a lot of things. And I think the thing, I just saw this one day as I was scrolling through my Tumblr, which is full of comic book stuff. And there's just one post about how these books, one of which has won an Eisner Award, both of which have sat on top of the New York Times bestseller list. Smile actually sat on top of the bestseller list until 2 years later when Drama unseated it. And it's still, Smile, which came out in 2010, is still number 7 mm-hmm. on the bestseller list as of this week.
It's really shocking to me. I mean, these are delightful books, but it's amazing that they really hit home for people. I like that. And yeah. I like that something like this is selling well and proving people wrong. You yeah. know, that yeah. that people have it in their minds that superhero comics, that's the genre. That's all there is. It is the beginning and end of it. And I like that something like this is cleaning house, doing well.
Yeah.
Changing people's minds.
Right. Yeah, the first of the books, I think we'll go to Smile first just because it came out first. It came out in 2010. This is autobiographical to a large mm-hmm. extent. It's a story of Raina herself when she basically in middle school, she had a she tripped and fell and messed up her front teeth. And it's basically, this whole book is kind of her story of her teeth and growing up
mm-hmm.
to a certain extent, getting braces, going through lots of dental surgery, And her, I mean, just going through puberty and finding your friends, who your friends are, who you are, how you feel about certain things. I enjoyed this a lot. It's really cute and really very charming.
I think maybe even more so than ever, people are really looking for honesty in their art. And Smile is one of the most honest books. It's not particularly, like, you can really analyze it and look deep on it and think about things, but it's like Persepolis without all the darkness of all the terrible things that were happening in Iran.
Yes.
It's a lot like Persepolis in that it's more or less this young woman illustrator's diary of bad things that have happened in her life. And the honesty of it really is what works for me. It feels so authentic, and the emotions, and you enjoy going through this journey with her.
Yeah.
You know, feel a lot of genuine empathy, and because it is so autobiographical, because it is so honest, I don't know. It's almost shocking how easily you fall into it. I was not expecting to enjoy it anywhere near as much as I did.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I was never a teenage girl, but I was a teenage boy, and anyone who grows up goes through this trouble of you're changing, you're going through new life experiences. You don't know what to do. You're so uncertain about everything. And my sister actually had braces. And this made me like kind of empathize with my sister a lot. And that I've never had braces, so I couldn't understand what that was like.
You're just naturally perfect and wonderful and beautiful.
My teeth are a mess. I need to go to the dentist.
I've never noticed, so.
Yeah. Just constant pain. That's what I'm living with.
So are you serious?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Not constant pain. Occasional pain, and that's probably not good.
No, it's not the best thing.
But this book reminded me of my high school years, my middle school years, where like every day you're just like, what am I doing?
Being a teenager is fucking shitty.
Yeah, it is.
It's really terrible. I like being an adult quite a lot.
Yes, me too.
Being young is fucking terrible.
Yeah, you don't know what you're doing.
No, you're dumb and greasy, and you have nothing you can do.
Yeah.
And you hate everybody, and you don't know why.
No.
It's terrible.
I think my favorite little bit from this is when she sees the Little Mermaid for the first time.
Yeah.
And and then everything about Little Mermaid, like the next few pages are just like, I love the Little Mermaid. I love it. I want to see it. And then that, like, there's the boy behind her in class, and he's like, yeah, I really like Little Mermaid too. And she immediately is like,
I love you.
I know.
It's pretty adorable that way. I think she's maybe only a couple of years older than I am.
Yeah, I think so. She's 38, I think. So.
Okay. That's a few good years older than me. I was, I guess I was like in elementary school when that movie came out, and you were like a zygote.
I was young child, yes.
Yeah.
But we both can empathize with her. She likes video games. Mm-hmm. She likes animation. Obviously she grew up to be a cartoonist.
She grew up to be a fucking nerd.
Yes. I mean,
look at those glasses.
Yes. I mean, there's just, it's so easily,
It's easy to empathize with. I think there are a lot of different ways that you can connect with her. And, you know, obviously, like you said, we were never teenage girls. We were teenagers at some point. We were nerds for our whole lives.
Yes.
I was going to say at some point. No, we've not grown out of that.
No,
we have a podcast about comic books.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
that's where the honesty comes from. That's where it makes it so easy to connect with.
Yeah, it's very earnest. It's very charming and very touching. It mm-hmm. connects with you.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to touch on in Smile before we move on?
You know, I'm not sure, like, really what her influences are.
Mm-hmm.
I would say in drama, which we're about to discuss,
mm-hmm.
I'd say her drawing is more refined. This looks right. a little bit looser. It looks like an earlier attempt. And it's always interesting to watch an artist sort of see how they drift around through their career.
Mm-hmm.
And in some situations, you can see them actually sort of learn to draw. Like they start out pretty poor, and then they, you know, become much more talented after they've had to grind out a whole bunch of books week after week.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say Smile, it's pretty obvious she probably did not read a lot of what we would call comic books. She wasn't reading Aquaman and the others. But she probably read an awful lot of Bill Watterson.
No, that's she actually lists him as her greatest yeah. influence on her website.
I never saw that. I feel good that I called that. It's really, really, really obvious, particularly in Smile. I feel like she has developed more, and it's more her own thing by drama.
Right. Next, we're going to talk about drama, which is loosely based on some of her experiences, mm-hmm. Raina's experiences
yeah.
in working in drama, like putting on plays. But this is still a work of fiction. There's, you know, no real characters, no real people in this. This is
yeah.
based around a character named Callie, who is a teenage girl as well.
Who is Raina, apparently.
And she's also a teenage girl who works on set set design for, you know, her drama department in her middle school. And it is in the same vein of Smile. It is about her going through all these experiences. This is a lot more centered, I think, on relationships
mm-hmm.
than Smile was. Smile was a lot more about just, you know, her, I guess, more self-esteem issues and finding yourself as a person. And, I mean, drama does have a lot of those themes as well, but there's a lot more, I think, centered on relationships with other people and boys in particular.
Boys.
She's a young teenage girl. She's, you know, she likes boys, and she's trying to figure out what's, you know, who she likes, who likes her, and that kind of the things that are terrifying to a teenage girl or boy, trying to, you know, decide what to do with your relationships, and, you know, do this person like me, do they not like me, what the hell do I do, stuff like this. All the while it's centered around, as they're developing this play, I guess the two other characters that are second only to Callie are Justin and Jesse, who mm-hmm. are twins, who both show up, but she meets them for the first time, who are both excellent performers, and they become fast friends, and there's a lot of drama, ha ha ha, between those, and between her relationship with those two gentlemen.
I'm out. I can't take that pun. Goodbye forever.
And that takes up that is the most of the plot. I mean, obviously there's a lot of family stuff in here. There's other boys. There's just relationships in general, life experience in general, her love of drama and set design and all that stuff. That's kind of her nerdy thing in this book. As you know, Raina obviously is an animator, and her in Smile, she is focusing on kind of that fan, you know, nerding out over drawing Little Mermaid. In this, it is a lot of set design, Broadway plays, all that stuff. I think the thing that stands out to most people after they've read this is that there are gay characters in it.
Is that really a story?
It's not a story, but I mean, it's a young adult fiction that has multiple gay characters in it.
And That's a very, I don't know, that's so weird to me that someone, like, that requires discussion.
I'm just saying because...
I'm not saying that, like, oh, my God, Robbie, what's your problem? But that's a story that, like, oh, there was a book and there was a gay guy in it.
It was just...
That makes me think of the Louis C.K. bit where he was like, there was a gay guy and he used to fuck me, and it turned out that... The story was there once was a gay man.
Yes.
That's what this is. That this is a book, and guess what? There are gay people, and that they probably were in drama club at some point. Yes. Surprise!
Surprise. It's so crazy. But I mean, I was just doing some little background research on this, mm-hmm. just doing some simple Google searches, and a lot of comments on reviews. Every review I read was all positive. Because this is a really charming, much like Smile, very charming, very touching, very earnest story. And many comments about, I wish that you could have known that beforehand, because I just gave this my child to read, and then they were... I'm like...
I'm sorry that you have to have a conversation with your ugly child.
Yes! Another Louis C.K. bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly it. It felt fine. I don't have any problem with... It felt like, wow, this is gay. These are characters. They're gay. Woo. It made it... You know, that's how life is. There are gay people. It's crazy. And I'm glad that they exist in this book. I'm glad that young children or teenagers are exposed to art where they get... Because as sad as it is, there's a lot of places in even America where... People don't know any gay people because the gay people they know aren't allowed to say that they're gay because they're fucking scared of the crazy people who would do awful things to them if they knew.
I know the ones that I grew up around, they were not openly gay, but they were openly fabulous,
right,
as it were, which still got them picked on an awful lot, and... Everyone sort of treated them like they knew. They just didn't say anything about it. They didn't do anything openly. I kind of regret. I don't know. There's not really a lot I could have done. I was a product of the environment I grew up in. I'm not sure if that was your experience as well.
Well, I mean, I went to a Christian school until seventh grade,
mm-hmm.
and gayness is a sin to be expelled with beatings.
That sounds delightful.
That's literally, they don't say
spankings!
That. They don't say that, but that was the ethos of the church, the school's church, whatever, that I went to for a long part of my life. And I mean, I went to public school for high school. Teenagers are awful people. And anything that's like
really
them,
true.
Anything that's not like them deserves humiliation and insults. But
well said.
Yeah,
I agree. Let's beat up everybody.
But I agree with you. I think her art is more developed in this.
Mm-hmm. It's more her own thing. Like
There's also these two, the twin brothers are also Asian, which is another little.
I never caught that.
Where
was that gone into?
Well, I mean, their father is clearly an Asian man. And I think they're just not drawn specifically, you know, super Asian, but they do have a kind of inferences. Oh, we're expected to be, you know, do really well in school, and we're allowed to do this and this. We're not, they don't want us both to be in drama,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. One of them has to be, at least one of them has to be in academics. That's kind of the inference.
Yeah.
Then that's a plus for this book, that they don't dwell on it. It's just like the gay character, like they just say, oh, that is a part of them. It is not defined them. They are just people. But much like Smile, it really does inhabit this time of life where everything is weird and uncertain, and you don't know what you're doing, and every moment is strange. And I liked it. I think I liked it more than Smile.
Mm.
Just because I felt it's a little more deeper. There's a little bit more depth.
I actually liked it less.
Okay.
I think it's because it is fictional.
Right.
It didn't ring quite as true to me. I did reread it a lot. It feels very good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It made me very happy to read it. And I think maybe it's one of those books that I might enjoy more and more with a rereading.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I'm looking at my copy of Smile. I don't know that I'm ever going to read it again. I don't know that I'm interested in reading it again. I feel like that experience was kind of a one-time thing where drama feels like it's growing on me more and more with each read.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I'm still coming away with thinking that Smile is the superior book.
Yeah, I mean, they're both very good. They're both really high quality.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt it was a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more better narrative, better structure.
It's fiction. You can structure fiction better than you can structure what actually happens to your life. It's more like Persepolis, which just sort of drags on for a while and then ends when she felt like it was going to end.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't even end with the big plot point of, you know, the grandmother dying or this or that. And Smile just sort of, it's like, here's this chunk of my life.
Right.
You know, and yeah. Tries to be honest to that, where drama is, you know, it's storytelling structure.
Yeah, yeah.
One is fitting life to a storytelling structure, and the other one is, you know, basing a storytelling structure on real life experience.
Yes. Getting back to the reason I chose for us to read these two.
Mm. This is a discussion I really want to have.
Yeah, I don't know what, there just seems to be this separation.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about this last night at dinner when, you know, we were talking about comics. So I have Matt and Melissa over for the weekend.
Do I have to ask who's Matt and Melissa?
You do not have to ask who they are. And they, you know, they
it's not as funny if I do that.
No, they listen. We've interviewed Melissa on our...
We did interview Melissa, didn't we?
We did. And, I mean, they are both comics readers. They both listen to our podcast. And we are talking about the term graphic novel.
Mm-hmm. I hate that word, don't you?
No, I don't like it either.
Yeah.
And they were trying to defend it, saying that, you know, not in the way that... I just think it's very pretentious. In that people try and keep this separation.
Yes.
Like in between certain types of the, I mean, it's the same thing.
It's the exact same thing.
It's sequential art storytelling. Yes.
And I think that even sequential art is a false highbrow attempt to, well, maybe I shouldn't have wasted highbrow, but it is an attempt to highbrow it up.
Yeah,
to dress up a pig, as it were.
I'm just trying to describe at its base what it is. It is art and words together.
No, I understand. I'm saying that the whole larger concept, my whole argument was I don't necessarily think it's a particularly ugly pig to begin with.
No, and
it's not something that you should really be ashamed of. It's comic book. It's okay to say that.
And they were trying to describe stuff that is like this, like Habibi, like Persepolis. Mm-hmm. What would you call those things, Eric?
Comics.
That's what I call them. And they think, oh, well, it's not the same thing as, let's say, Black Widow number 5. And I'm like...
It's a different genre the comic book medium.
Exactly. And
people don't understand. Superhero is a genre of comic. Like... Western is a kind of book or movie or comic.
I picked these because I don't want, there shouldn't be separation.
It is a false dichotomy. I just said that.
You did. And I completely agree with you. If you didn't say it, I would have. These books are, you can read Inhuman number 1, you can read Smile or Drama, you could read Habibi, you can read Detective Comics, you can read Chew or Why the Last Man.
Yes.
Criminal or Sleeper. I just listed 6 different genres of comic books. Those are all different genres. It's okay. They're all comics. It's I don't. The comic book sites don't cover books like Smile and Drama a lot, and I don't understand why. They should. I think a lot of the comics media perpetuates this separation, and yeah. I think the best sites like I like Comics Alliance. I make no bones about that. That's my favorite site because they cover a lot of different stuff that are all comics. And CBR does it pretty well too. Mm-hmm. But they branch out and start covering movies and television shows a lot. And I mean, a lot, most sites have to just because that's what brings in people. Smile and Drama, these are comics just like anything else we read.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for comics readers to branch out and try new things. Try books mm-hmm. that aren't superhero books.
It's an important thing to remember. And we've had a similar discussion to this.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's one of the reasons that I'm so glad that we read these books. If you remember when we discussed the panel what's his crazy name? Why can't I think of it?
Which one?
Not Liefeld, the other guy that sucks. The guy that everyone loved in the 90s, and I can't stand, Todd McFarlane. When he was on that panel, and he said strange, sexist things, and everyone got all up in arms about it.
Mm-hmm.
And people are upset because they feel like, oh, this man is saying that this is what comics are. No. If you want comics to be something else, go out and make your own comics. Anyone can effing do it. Raina Telgemeier did exactly that. She made a book that is perfectly appropriate for young women. It's got a voice, a young woman's voice. It is a comic book. Comic books are not inherently sexist. Maybe superhero comics are.
Some of them.
Yeah, because they are sort of at their heart, they're boy stories.
Yeah. They have the male gaze.
Yeah, they do. And you know what? I think it's okay to fantasize about things. It's what they are. And it's absolutely okay for people to make comics about boy drama and how difficult it is to grow up as a girl. I think it's a wonderful, beautiful thing.
Yeah, I think most people who write and draw this stuff don't have a separation. They understand.
They probably don't.
Most people, but a lot of people who don't read, I mean, like, they are like, well, why? What do you think? Like, what experience do you have with people using the word graphic novel? And I'm like, well, everyone I've ever talked to, and I say that, you know, if you know they're an older person.
Yes.
And I say, I read comic books or I have a comic book podcast, which, I mean, mm-hmm. I talk about it a lot. It's part of my life. And they go, oh, what graphic novel have you read recently?
I get that, too. Like, I'll say comic, and then they'll say graphic novel back to me. Like, you know, like when I say comic, like I'm dropping the N-word or something. And then they're like, oh, you read an African-American. That's nice. I'm like, no, it's not really a dirty word.
Comic book.
We can use that word. We can say comic.
Yeah, it's fine. It's a comic book. It's not a bad thing. I read a comic book, and that's all it is. It's not. It's 50 years of parents thinking that
mm-hmm.
comics are corrupting their children and need to be tossed in the garbage, and people still have that image in their minds for some reason.
When it comes down to it, baby boomers are just really dumb. That's what I say.
Hard to disagree. Smile and Drama are both really great stories.
Mm-hmm.
Really touching and earnest and funny, cute stories about growing up, about being a teenager.
Yeah.
If you listen to this podcast, you can identify with the things that they explore.
If you listen to this podcast and you know what it's like to be a nerd.
Yes, exactly. You'll enjoy both of them. I cannot suggest them more. Anything else you want to touch on before we move on?
I don't know. If I had a daughter, I would give her these books.
Exactly. I'm thinking about getting Smile for my sister just because I know she'll like it. That, you know, a story about getting braces.
Mm-hmm. It's a pretty rough story.
Yeah. So that is it for Nerd Boy Book Club. Okay, so folks, next week in the spirit of the new Captain America movie, we are doing Captain America: The Winter Soldier Collection, which is basically the very beginning, the first 15 issues or so of Ed Brubaker's run on Captain America. It cuts out the House of M tie-in issue because it really has nothing to do with it. But other than that, yeah, we're going to talk about Bucky, Winter Soldier, Cap, Ed Brubaker reinvigorating Captain America, changing the direction of that character for a long... Still, I mean, even what Rick Remender is doing today is pretty much in response to that. Yeah, I'm quite excited to read it. It's really good. But I think with that, that'll bring this segment to a close and this episode to a close. Eric's sad, I can tell.
I'm crying.
I'm looking at his... There's tears just rolling down his face. It's so...
You're sad. Not looking at me because I'm making a terrible face that you would have reacted to.
Yeah, I'm not looking at you. You're like...
You just lied to everyone.
I do it a lot.
You are a liar.
I do it a lot. They should get used to it. It's just to protect you folks, okay? You really don't want to know what Eric actually looks like most of the time. It would just frighten you.
Well, no, I'm just gorgeous.
Another lie.
Nope. Gorgeous.
I was speaking of myself.
I'm talking about me always. It's always about me.
Of course. But this is episode 47. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You find every single episode we've ever done right there, streaming and downloadable. You can also find us on iTunes, search for Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You'll find us and only us. Subscribe, leave us nice reviews if you like us. We like nice reviews. Good reviews get us more listeners. We like more listeners. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Like us there. You'll get every new episode in your feed along with Eric's April Fool's jokes and all that stuff. If you want pictures of Dark Claw, the crazy ass Amalgam Comics creation.
You love Dark Claw.
I have a soft spot for Dark Claw.
Mm-hmm.
He's the most ridiculous bullshit. You can also find us on Twitter at HBC Hour. Tweet at us there. You can email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. Also, we're on Tumblr, handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. Any of those places, please contact us, leave us reviews, suggestions, criticisms, critiques, suggestions, advice, love for Eric at least.
You can spread it around. I'll let you have a little bit.
I'm taken.
Doesn't matter. love, man. You got to share it.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter at Mixmaster Cereal. That's M-I-X.
Okay.
M-I-X-M-A-S-T-E-R-C-E-R-E-A-L. And I'm on Tumblr at the same name. Eric, where can they find you online?
Where can they?
Yep.
You can look at my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com. You can see much of the other things I get up to online at ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet right at me. Why don't you? My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R, Bad Example.
But yeah, folks, until next time, hope you have a good one.
Rock and roll.